Blog Talk Radio.
So I'm gon' drop you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the last real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left, the left. You will fake, so I'm gon' drop you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the last real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. God, please protect me if this shit go left. Cause I can cook a kilo by my goddamn self. In the kitchen, water whipping with the left.
Son of a bitch.
I don't know women, but I know who got the milk.
What's up, everybody?
Like a woman being milk.
Welcome, welcome, welcome.
I'm trapped down by myself. You ain't no Gucci to go
to.
This shit ain't cut as raw.
A lovely Monday show, if I don't say so myself. We have oodles of stuff. So the White House has a new communications director. The guy used to hate Donald Trump. Now he loves Donald Trump. And in fact, he went back and purged his old tweets, which basically ripped Trump to shreds, which is kind of funny when you think about it. but we're going to talk about how this guy really got his position, which I think is very important and is something very few people are talking about. We also have Chuck Schumer, Democratic leader Chuck Schumer, how he's trying to be woke. Woke Chuck Schumer is now apparently a thing. We have tensions boiling over in Israel-Palestine and some scary stuff going on over there. Later on in the show, we're going to discuss what issues matter to the American people, and you will be unsurprised to see what tops the list and what's at the bottom of the list. And then also, if we have the time, which I think we will later on, we have Glenn Beck, who went on a conservative podcast, and they spoke about the state of right-wing media, and his answers about stuff is just hilarious, like what he says about other conservative hosts. Because, yeah, I don't know if you guys know this, Glenn Beck is Glenn Beck. So if he has negative things to say about other hosts, good googly-moogly. You might want to clean up your own house first there, son. Okay, now let's start here with Trump's new communication director. Let's do it. The White House has a new communications director named Anthony Scaramucci, and The Intercept dug up his old thoughts, or not his old thoughts, this is from a while ago, but it's his thoughts on money and politics. This is from, I believe, an article around the 2012 election. I'm going to get to this in a second, but first let me just give you a few funny facts here about Anthony Scaramucci. He apparently despised Trump. He's one of these clowns who appears on, like, Fox Business Network at, like, 4 o'clock in the morning on shows that nobody watches and always is a loudmouth, obnoxious prick. And he used to hate Trump so much, and he had all these anti-Trump tweets, and he said all these anti-Trump things, and then ever since he got hired by Trump, he literally went back and deleted all of them and announced that he was going to delete all of his old tweets. You know, people grow, people change, so I'm going to go back and delete all these because now Trump is my daddy because he hired me and I like this position that I got. These guys have no core. They have no core whatsoever. You remember when Mitt Romney gave that speech when he was thinking about running again and he was calling Trump, like, dangerously unfit and ripping him as a failed businessman and basically saying he's a joke? Well, he did that, but he also, when he ran for president, begged for Trump's endorsement. And then when Trump said, hey, maybe I'm going to make you Secretary of State, Mitt was like, really, Daddy? Okay, let's go out to dinner. Can you hold my hand while we're there? So these guys, they have no core. They have no core. They're all self-aggrandizing narcissists and careerists. That's the best description of clowns like this. So now Anthony Scaramucci is the new communications director. And let's jump into what he said about the issue of money in politics. Scaramucci, the organizer of the dinner, this again is around the 2012 election, told me the next day that the guests had witnessed the activation of a sleeper cell of hedge fund managers against Obama. Quote, that's what you see happening in the hedge fund community because they now have the power, because of Citizens United, to aggregate capital into political action committees and to influence the debate. This is a guy who also, I forgot to mention, used to be a hedge fund manager himself. Hedge fund guy, general right-wing prick, elitist. And this is him admitting publicly, back around the election, the 2012 election, that, oh man, isn't it great, this money in politics thing? Because now there's been an activation of a sleeper cell of hedge fund managers, and because of Citizens United, we can donate a tremendous amount of money into political action committees to influence the debate and the election. So, look at what he's saying. Yeah, we buy influence. That's what we do. It's that simple. We buy influence. We pay the politicians. We get what we want. And in fact, this is something the mainstream media hasn't been talking about much at all, but how did Scaramucci get this job? I thought you hate Trump, and I guess Trump hates you, and you were bad-mouthing him all over TV. Well, no. Behind the scenes, listen to this. Quote, Scaramucci has donated enormous amounts of money to a wide panoply, that's a funny word, of politicians. He was national finance co-chair for the 2016 Scott Walker presidential campaign. How'd that go, buddy? Raised money for Jeb Bush and then personally maxed out to Trump's campaign and gave $100,000 to Rebuilding America Now, a pro-Trump super PAC. Damn, $100,000. His hedge fund, Skybridge Capital, also donated $75,000 to a Mitt Romney super PAC in 2012 and $100,000 to Karl Rove super PAC in 2013. So he gave $100,000 to Trump's super PAC. You want to know why he got the job? That's why he got the job. Because somebody said to Trump, oh, hey, man, you're looking for a communications director who's aggressive, who's an attack dog, who knows how to not back down and fight and argue on your side no matter what? I got this guy, Scaramucci. And he gave $100,000 to your attempt to get elected, to your campaign, to your PAC, super PAC. And that's the deciding factor. I'm sure there's a lot of guys out there who are far-right clowns who love defending Daddy Trump. We know it. We've all seen him. But why did this guy get picked and the other ones didn't get picked? Money. Money runs politics. That's how it functions. Now, the final point I want to make about this is, so he basically bought the position with this huge donation, but look at the facts of this case that I just described to you in contrast to what the Supreme Court says about this, what they ruled in Citizens United and what they said about the more general issue of money in politics. Quote, we now conclude that independent expenditures, including those made by corporations, do not give rise to corruption or the appearance of corruption. That speakers may have influence over or access to elected officials does not mean that those officials are corrupt. The appearance of influence or access, furthermore, will not cause the electorate to lose faith in our democracy. I've never seen a more wrong opinion in my entire life. That's so wrong that we need a new word to describe it that's stronger than wrong. Wrong doesn't do it justice. Wrong is too simple, too you know, baseline to really pack the punch that's needed in the word to describe just how wrong this is. Everybody put your suggestion for the new word, which means like the wrongest thing ever in human history. Oh, my God, that's the dumbest fucking thing I've ever read ever. Put your new word in the comment section to tell me what you think that word should be. And I'll look through it, and I will find the one I like the best, and I will use it. I will use that word, and that'll just be our word. For, oh my God, I can't believe any human beings are that enormously, colossally, gargantuanly, if that's a word, stupid to come to that conclusion. they're saying money in politics, whether by billionaires or by corporations, that, yeah, no, that doesn't, that's not corruption, and it doesn't even give the appearance of corruption, and that does not cause the electorate to lose faith in our democracy. Why do you think the approval rating of Congress, even like just after you elect them, is like 12%, 9%, thereabouts, on a good day, maybe 21%? Why do you think that is? Because the electorate has lost faith in our democracy because they know we're always voting for the lesser of two evils because both sides are massively corrupt and taking colossal amounts of big money. But they couldn't see that. The old idiots on the Supreme Court wearing robes, going to their job decreeing shit, they couldn't see that. And here you go again. This is just another example. Now, what would they say, by the way, the Supreme Court? Oh, hey, guys, look at this. People who badmouthed each other, Scaramucci hated Trump, said horrible things about Trump, but somehow he got the position? How is he more qualified than somebody who didn't bash Trump to be Trump's communication director? Well, because Scaramucci gave a tremendous amount of money to the super PAC. That's why he got it. You know, this is buying favors, buying a job. This is how it works. Not just on the Republican side, on the Democratic side. You know how many big money donors there were to Democratic politics, and then they got ambassador positions? This is how the system functions. I scratch your back, you scratch mine. This is why do you think ExxonMobil gets billions of dollars of subsidies every year? They're one of the most profitable corporations on the planet. Why do they need subsidies? That's a welfare check. They get a giant welfare check every year because they bought the government. And they come up with some bullshit issues. Oh, they need it for research and development. They need it for research and development. They're one of the most profitable corporations in the world. They can't fund their own research and development. The fact that they're one of the most profitable corporations in the world isn't incentive enough to get their own research and development. By that logic, everybody needs a subsidy because certainly smaller businesses than ExxonMobil need incentive to do research and development, right? If ExxonMobil needs it and they're that big and that profitable, it is a fucking sick joke. And they didn't realize it, the Supreme Court. They didn't realize it. Oh, hey, this is eroding faith in our democracy, as it should, because we're no longer a democracy. We function as an oligarchy or a kleptocracy or a corporatocracy. They didn't realize it, and they said, yeah, go ahead. Tidal wave, tsunami of big money, just destroying our system. So we have lobbyists, we have PACs, we have billionaires, and what you want is left at the side of the road. So here you go. Anthony Scaramucci, the new corrupt White House communications director, got his job because of his giant contribution. He knows that that's the way the system works because he said there's a hedge fund sleeper cell out there waiting to get Republicans elected. They were waiting to get Mitt Romney elected. And we activated that sleeper cell by allowing more big money into politics. And as a result, we are where we are now. And the Supreme Court the entire time, out somewhere in la-la land, playing with their own feces, not understanding the basic way that our politics functions. Okay. Now, let's move on to the Democrats. I got a lot to say about this story here because I think there's some unnecessary credit being given. All right, let's do it. Senator Chuck Schumer was asked directly if the Democrats would support single-payer health care, the Senate Democrats, and he did a tap dance. So let's watch, and then we'll break it down.
The beginning, week after week, month after month, we're going to roll out specific pieces here that are quite different than the Democratic Party you heard in the past. We were too cautious. We were too namby-pamby. This is sharp, bold, and will appeal to both the old Obama coalition, let's say, the young lady who's just getting out of college, and the Democratic voters who deserted us for Trump, the blue-collar worker.
Some may wonder.
Economics, George, is our strength.
Some may wonder
we are
if it's
going to
be
at it.
Bold enough. I mean, even your New York colleague, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, talking about health care, says if you really want to get prices down, you have healthcare. Will Democrats unify behind single-payer healthcare?
Well, our economic agenda, we've talked so much about healthcare that we are not going to address that in this agenda. We've been talking about it, and let me just say, the first thing we're going to do should, first, I think that this, the Trump care will not pass. It just is
rotten. You think it's dead?
I think it's very unlikely to pass because it's rotten to the core. People are not for reducing taxes on rich people or getting rid of Medicaid, which is a very, very middle class now thing, as well as for poor people. So the first things we're going to propose, if the and the Republicans hopefully will join us once they abandon this rotten bill, is some cost sharing, which the insurance companies say will help bring down premiums and stabilize the market. Something else that Republicans have often supported, which is reinsurance proposed by Tom Carper and Tim Kaine. And Claire McCaskill's proposed something in the Bexar counties, B-A-R-E. You can, if you can't get insurance in those counties, you can get the same kind of health insurance we get. Then we're going to look at broader things. Single payer is one of them.
So that is on the
Medicare,
table?
Well, sure, many things are on the table. Medicare for people above 55 is on the table. A buy-in to Medicare is on the table. Buy-in to Medicaid is on the table. On the broader issues, we will start examining them once we stabilize the system.
Okay. So let me, okay, sorry, I was just jotting stuff down there at the end. Okay, so let me break this down for you. Here's what you need to know about Chuck Schumer. He's one of Wall Street's favorite Democrats. He's a corporate Democrat extraordinaire. But he's also very smart. So unlike Hillary Clinton, for example, who couldn't like read the political winds and didn't understand that, hey, in order to win, you have to stop going to the right. Stop. You can't, you know, say, single payer will never happen. You know, you can't basically be pro-war and more intervention in Syria when you're known as the too hawkish candidate. You can't take a mealy-mouthed approach to money in politics and say stuff like, we need to get rid of dark money in politics. Whoa, 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 why'd you add the word dark? No, we need to get rid of money in politics, not just dark. Dark means we just need more transparency so we know who's buying our politicians better, but still allow them to buy the politicians. So she didn't realize, they weren't smart enough to realize in the Clinton campaign, oh, stop running to the right. They honestly thought that was the path to victory. Let's run right. Chuck Schumer's smarter than them. So he can sense it. He knows, he sees what happens with Bernie Sanders. He sees what's happening with Elizabeth Warren. He sees how all the energy is among young millennial progressives, the populist left, and how we have an agenda where we are unapologetic and we say, here are our demands. You want our vote, free college, Medicare for all, end the wars, living wage, New Deal, legalize marijuana. He sees that. He senses the political winds. So now he's paying lip service to us. Now remember, Chuck Schumer is the guy who said, he had a famous quote, I think he was talking about Hillary versus Trump, where he said, no, the Democratic strategy, what we need to do is forget the base. For every one voter we lose in the base, we pick up two moderate voters in the suburbs. So basically, forget the progressive base, let's get the moderate Republicans. Well, now he's learned his lesson and said, ooh, shoot. Turns out that that's not a good idea. So let's pay lip service to the progressives now and see what happens. And he's getting a lot of credit from the media here for saying, oh, the Democrats are now open to single payer. It should be debated. Wait, why? No. Why? What do you mean you're open to it? You're either for it or you're against it. Which is it? We're open to it. It should be debated. No. What do you mean it should be debated? You haven't told us what side of that debate you are on, Chuck. Again, see, this is, I'm not just going to come out and say I'm for single payer, because then I'm on the record, and then you're tying me down to it, and then when I don't do it, you get to say, oh, look, you're a fucking liar. I didn't say I was for single payer, though. I said the Democrats should be open to it, and we should debate it. So, mealy mouth move, doing his tap dance, but inching to the left because he knows it's just untenable for me to stay here in the center or center right and continue being an open neoliberal because that's so despised right now. So look at what he does. He goes from, what's going to be in your bold new Democratic plan? Is single payer going to be in there? And Chuck says, well, no, look, we're talking so much about healthcare right now with the Trump care debate that we're not going to address it. Well, that's weird. Just because you're talking about it a lot with the Trump care debate doesn't mean you shouldn't address it. It's still should be a gigantic part of your platform. Of course. He goes, no, we're not going to address it because of that. All right, so that's already like, what are you doing here, Chuck? What are you doing here, Chucky boy? And then he moves on to address it. I love that. We're not going to address it because we're already talking about it a lot. Anyway, now let me tell you, we need to do cost sharing. We need to do reinsurance. We need to do Medicare buy-in from age 55. We need to do many things. Many things are on the table. When he's asked, are the Democrats going to do single payer? No, many things are on the table. He's not for it. Of course he's not for it. He's not for it. And to the extent that a guy like Chuck Schumer would be for it, he'd be Anthony Rendon. That's what he'd be in California. What did Rendon do? Oh, yeah, no, totally for single payer. Oh, yeah. Oh, what? You guys got a single payer bill here? Let's kill the vote on this single payer bill. Thank you very much. But I'm still in favor of single payer. If you're in favor of single payer, allow the vote on the bill and say yes. I'm in favor of single payer, but in Clause 3, Subsection D, line 42, I mean, they had a misplaced comma, so I'm not in favor of it because you messed up the specifics of it. So what am I going to do? I kill the vote. Wolf in sheep's clothing. Wolf in sheep's clothing. You want to know how we know you're serious? Here's how we'll know you're serious. Come out right now and say the Democrats no longer take corporate money. No longer take PAC money. You want to be serious or not? That's it. You do that and you say, we're in favor of primarying Democrats. Yes, we're the Democratic Party, but we understand the strength in the party. You should primary us to get the best candidate possible. You want to be serious? You want to be serious. You want us to believe you. The Democratic Party no longer takes corporate money or PAC money. We don't do it because we need to represent the workers. And if we take the corporate money and the PAC money, we can't represent the workers because now we're beholden to our donors or corporations and PACs and rich people. So we're not going to do that, and we're going to accept primary challenges. That's it. And then we'll believe you when you're paying the left lip service. Single payer, I'm open to it. We should debate it. No, you shouldn't be open to it. We shouldn't debate it. You should be for it. Because I have some news for you, Chuck. This is not negotiable. 60% of the American people are now in favor of single payer. Actually, there was a poll we just covered the other day. 62% of the American people are now in favor of single payer. That's the American people. That's not 60% of Democrats. It's over 80% of Democrats. You're going to say maybe to something over 80% of your party wants? Well, so then you're not a small D Democrat then. Is that small? No. No, that's right. You're not a small D Democrat. If you say, no, 80% of my party, more, not interested, or we're open to it. No, don't be open to it. Be for it. And by the way, there are more Republicans who support Medicare for All than don't. So we have this issue, which is just one of the most popular programs in the country, which the American people are screaming for. Maybe. You say maybe. Oh, get the fuck out of here. This one's not negotiable. We're not having this discussion. See, this is what they do. They drag the debate to the right and then insist you meet them in the middle. And that's a trick. That's a trick that we're not going to fall for anymore. We're going to say, hey, we have certain things that are not negotiable. You want to have other things where, hey, it's open and let's discuss it. What exactly should the number be for the top marginal rate and how should we craft it for our progressive tax system? We could have that discussion. Nobody,
No millennial leftist is going to say, no, I have a hard line on that. Nobody's going to say that. There are certain things we do have a hard line on, though. Living wage, Medicare for all, free college. These ones are not, if you're against it, okay, get the fuck out. Get out. Sorry. Get out. You're not doing your damn job. You're just not. So we have to hold them accountable. And we're doing that. JusticeDemocrats.com. Remember, guys, we're all the corporate Democrats who are the heart of the problem in the Democratic Party, whether it be a corrupt Joe Crowley or corporate Joe Manchin, we're primarying. We're saying, you guys are the worst of the worst. We see your record. You can't hide it. Joe Manchin votes more with Trump than he votes with Bernie Sanders. We're supposed to sit there and go, oh, yeah, you're on our team. But you're not on our fucking team. You don't even think the EPA should regulate greenhouse gases. So you don't think the EPA should be in the business of environmental protection. And you want us to fucking cease fire? No, hell no. We're coming after you. Your time is limited. Your days are numbered. You're going to lose. It's just a matter of if you lose to a populist leftist, a Justice Democrat, Paula Swearingen, or you lose to a Republican. Because I'll tell you what, you know who has a much better chance of being a Republican? Paula Swearingen. The populist left defeats the right, whereas corporate Democrats do not defeat the right. Ask Hillary Clinton how that went. So we're here to fix the party. They're kicking and screaming, and they hate us. They despise us. The Democratic establishment thinks we're the worst thing ever. But they don't even know. We're here to save the party by making it what it should have been all along. It should have been a populist left party. It should have continued with FDR's economic vision. And we should catch up to the rest of the industrialized world. And the fact that there's still neoliberals running the party, still corporatists running the party, is the entire problem with the party. But now Chuck Schumer's waking up and realizing, I have to at least pay lip service to it. Well, a lip service ain't enough. As my good friend JoJo said, you know it's just too little too late. Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, I got some more on Chuck Schumer, and then we'll get to Rand Paul and why he disagrees with buying American. Damn. It's almost like he's not a senator from the United States of America. All right, stay right there. We'll be right back, everybody.
Loving can hurt. Loving can hurt sometimes. But it's the only thing that I know.
Now he might get a little more credit than he did in the last one. Chuck Schumer is bending over backwards to attempt to be woke, as the kids would say. We just covered the story about how he said, well, single payer, we should debate it. The Democrats should be open to it. Now, there, I don't believe him at all. I think he knows he has to pay lip service or become totally irrelevant and obsolete and have the Democrats continue to lose. So instead of just coming out and saying, I'm for it, he's saying, nah, we should debate it. And that's the Joe Manchin dodge, too, by the way, because it gives him – the media will do the misleading headlines for him, as they've done, where they almost imply like he's for it, even though he's not. And – he thinks that gives him the progressive brownie points that are needed to win an election. So that's a standard political move, in my opinion, if you look in context of what he said about single payer. But we have something else he said here, which is maybe even more interesting. So look at this. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says that Democrats, not Russia, are to blame for Hillary Clinton's loss to President Trump. When you lose to somebody who has 40% popularity, you don't blame other things. James Comey, Russia, you blame yourself, Schumer said in an interview Saturday with the Washington Post. So what did we do wrong? People didn't know what we stood for, just that we were against Trump, and still believe that. Schumer said the new agenda is not about moving the party left or right, and it's not about appealing to one coalition or another. A strong, sharp-edged, populist, bold economic message appeals to the Obama coalition and the people who voted for Trump, former Democrats who voted for Trump. So, damn! On this one, Chuck Schumer is just correct. He's saying, okay, we need to look in the mirror. We need to look in the mirror, because the problem wasn't any of the things that are normally used to obfuscate and deflect. The problem had to be us. Trump had a 60% unfavorability rating on the day he won. What? How is that even possible? Exactly, how's that fucking possible? Because people disliked Hillary Clinton and the Democrats so much that they said, I don't know, I'll roll the dice with this guy because at least he feels anti-establishment. whereas Hillary was promising you the establishment. She was promising you business as usual. She didn't tap into the anger in middle America or the anger among the progressive base. So she said, hey, I'm going to run my campaign based on continuing Obama's, you know, legacy. And isn't it nice to take incremental steps in a somewhat left-wing / corporate direction? She thought, hey, it's good enough. It's good enough, right? What are you going to do, vote for the other guy? So the campaign was, oh, my God, they're terrible, they're the worst, they're horrendous. And, hey, stronger together, break down the barriers and stuff. And nobody likes that. And Trump, meanwhile, was stumping in the Rust Belt talking about all the factory jobs that were lost because outsourcing and crooked Hillary was for the outsourcing deals, and we did the war in Iraq, and how terrible was that? We needed to take that money and rebuild our, you know, our area here at home. And then he sprinkled in a hefty dose of xenophobia and bigotry, which appealed to some other people on the right. So he kept the right-wing base intact, and he also was able to expand to people who hated the establishment. So, yeah, it doesn't matter how much you scream about Russia. Election meddling, Russia, 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 Russia. Russia what? You do know the core of the argument is that Russia allegedly gave the DNC hacked emails to WikiLeaks and then WikiLeaks ran with it. So in other words, your argument is if only Russia didn't expose the corruption of the DNC behind the scenes, maybe Hillary would have won. If your argument is we should know less about what Hillary and the Democrats were doing behind the scenes, well, that's a pretty shitty argument. Because what you're saying is forget democracy, forget transparency in government, forget, you know, learning about the wrongs that are involved in our political system. Forget about all that. I want to play for a team. And anything that would have helped my team, even if it's hiding the corruption, well, I'm for that. So it doesn't matter how much you scream about Russia, it doesn't matter how much you scream about Comey. Oh, my God, Comey with the investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails, and he reopened it, you know, in a short time span before the election. He also closed it before the election, too. He said, yeah, we have to look into this stuff because of Anthony Weiner and Huma Abedin and Hillary. And then before the election, he said, all right, we're done looking into that. Nobody ever says that. They say, oh, my God, he opened it up, and that's why she lost. Really? Well, then why didn't you mention that he closed it? So if anything, shouldn't that help her? Because before the election, he said, yeah, we're now closing what we looked into. They have nothing but excuses, the corporate Democrats. And let's be clear here, Chuck Schumer is a corporate Democrat, but as I've said many times, he's more politically astute than Hillary Clinton and than many other corporate Democrats. Because he saw what happened with Bernie Sanders. He's not an idiot. He doesn't have a cinder block for a head. Where there's some people on the corporate Democratic side who look at what Bernie Sanders did and they go, yeah, no, Bernie's stupid. Can you read a poll? Do you see that he has a 60% favorability rate? Do you see he's literally the most popular politician in the United States of America? What are you going to do, shit on the most popular politician and expect to come out with people liking you? No, they're going to despise you. So what does Chuck Schumer do? Okay, we got to at least borrow from his message. We got to at least borrow from his message. So let's try to take some progressive rhetoric and sprinkle it in. And I'll say, hey, maybe the Democrats have some problems and we got to work it out. But look, the ultimate goal, how you'll know that the Democrats are serious, two things. When they say, yes, you should primary Democrats because we need a stronger party, and that's the only way to create a stronger party, primary us. If they say that, and if they say, we're done with corporate money and PAC money, then you know they're serious. If they don't do those things, they're not serious. Inch in a more progressive direction, which is better than doing nothing, but they're still, the non-negotiables are still, they haven't agreed to it. They haven't agreed to stopping with the big money corrupting the party, and they haven't agreed to getting better candidates and getting rid of the scum like Joe Manchin to replace him with, you know, real progressives who are going to fight for the right things. So big money, primaries, two major issues. That's how you'll know they're serious if they do that. But they're not going to do that. We know they're not going to do that, which is why Justice Democrats are here. Ro Khanna, sitting congressperson, Justice Democrat, he goes, primary me. You want to primary me? Primary me. I don't care. Why? Because he says, look, I believe in my message. I believe in my record. Go check my record, And here, I'm going to tell you exactly what I stand for. You could put anybody up against that. I think I'll win. Simple enough, right? Hey, I believe in what I'm saying. My record is good. So what the fuck do I have to worry about? Go ahead. Go run whoever you want against me. I don't care. I don't care. In fact, it's a good thing because then I come out even stronger than I was when I went in. So until all the Democrats are saying that, and all the Democrats are also doing what Ro Khanna does, no corporate money, no PAC money, then they're not serious. So that's how you know they're serious. And by the way, that's how you know Justice Democrats is the only answer from within the party. There are answers from without, you know, outside the party, who we consider our allies, by the way. If you want to go about it the third party route, you want to go about it, you know, as an independent or whatever, by all means, as long as you're for the policy positions we're for, we'll support you. Like, we'll say, hey, they're our allies. So we probably have more allies from outside the party than from within the party, but the only way for the Democratic Party to get serious again and to win again and to go back to what it should have been all along is the Justice Democrats way. So go to justicedemocrats.com/fight, and you gotta back us up, man. You gotta help us out. You gotta donate to us because we're running against well-funded giants with more name recognition. They're well-funded because they're sellouts. So we have an institutional disadvantage because they could raise a tremendous amount of money from corporations, from billionaires, from PACs, whereas we have to raise in small amounts from a large number of people. So justicedemocrats.com/fight. You have to help us out because there's the only way to take back the party. There's no cheating. There's no, like, shortcut to taking back the party. It just doesn't exist. I wish it did, but it doesn't exist. So the only way to take back the party is the hard work that we're doing right now and the hard work you guys are doing right now. And we appreciate every single effort from each and every one of you. Okay. Rand Paul commented on trade and the idea of buy American, hire American on CNN, and he's not a fan of it. He's not a fan of buying American, hiring American. So let's watch and then we'll discuss.
President Trump, of course, when he took the oath of office, he made a very clear promise. Take a listen.
We will follow two simple rules: buy American and hire American.
I'm not going to go through the litany of Trump clothing products that are made in China and other parts of the world that are not America, but we learned this week in addition that Trump's businesses have once again taken steps to hire foreign workers. Trump's Mar-a-Lago club and his golf course in Jupiter, Florida have filed documents to bring in additional foreign workers under the H-2B visa program. Is this a problem for the president, saying one strong thing about buying and hiring American while his businesses do the complete opposite?
You know, I think all of us have this goal to buy American, but we have to think this thing through. Trade is a little bit, you got to go beneath the surface to get scratch beneath the surface. For example, I get shirts at Walmart. I get them for $7 sometime. Amazing deal. Target the same way. And the thing is that that money that you save for ordinary working people is an enormous amount. It's somewhere between $800 to $1,000 a year the ordinary person saves. And a lot of that stuff, unfortunately, isn't made here, but those people are richer because they got their shirts a lot cheaper. It used to be a shirt, just a regular button-up shirt, might be $20, $25, and still might be in places, and at Walmart it's $7. And so that savings, though, allows working-class people to have savings, to get a television set, to go on vacation, to buy gas for their truck. So trade is really a good thing, and we can't get too caught up in exactly where it's made, but we want our country to be strong by lowering regulations and taxes so we can compete.
Okay. So at the end there, he just goes full, you know, right-wing caricature parody. You know, the answer, I think, deregulation and tax cuts. Oh, really? It's not like, you know, I've never heard that before from other Republicans. You hear it all the time. Like, that's their answer for absolutely everything. I'm surprised they haven't started saying with certain foreign policy ideas, like, you know, we should deregulate and do tax cuts for the rich. Because they say it with everything else. That's their answer for everything domestically. Every single thing. Deregulation and tax cuts for the rich. What? So that's just hilarious. But then, so look at the rest of what was said there, though. He says, I buy Walmart shirts for $7. And you don't think that there may be giant downsides to that? Like, that doesn't occur to you. You think it's only a good thing. Well, yeah, it's a good thing, right? Because then you save the money, and then if you save the money, it helps out families, and they can use the rest of that money to buy a TV or a refrigerator or whatever, and so therefore it's actually helping the middle class by doing it. Whoa, 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 whoa. Whoa, 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 whoa. So, first of all, when you have all these products made overseas, what happened? You shipped jobs out of the U.S., good-paying jobs out of the U.S., to some Bangladeshi factory where a kid makes your shirt in near slave labor going on. The wages they get paid are next to nothing, no safety regulations. Again, oftentimes it's like little kids making this stuff. They work insane hours. So you lost good-paying U.S. jobs. You ship the jobs overseas. You're exploiting labor there, exploiting poor people there, and then you also, so you have a race to the bottom in two ways, a race to the bottom in terms of the kind of jobs that are being done, that are being created overseas, where they're very low paying and no benefits and incredible hours, and so it's a race to the bottom there, and then it's also a race to the bottom here with wages, because what happens? You say, oh, it'll help the middle class. Well, wait, but the guy who worked in the factory in the small town who made a middle class living, now, where is he? He's working at the Walmart, making $7.25 an hour. So you say, oh yeah, it saves money, and because you save money when you buy stuff. But the wages are also slashed tremendously too, so at the end of the day, it actually hurts the middle class. It definitely hurts the middle class. So he doesn't, like, how do you not see that angle to it? How do you not see the wages angle and the jobs angle? All you see is the cost of the item. Well, you don't see what goes into the cost of that item and how you ship the jobs to fucking Bangladesh and you lose jobs here in the U.S. and they're replaced with lower paying jobs here in the U.S. So no, Rand, he gives the stock libertarian answer and he's given no thought to it. You know, you read an Ayn Rand book, you read a Hayek book, you read a, you know, Murray Rothbard book, and you go, I figured everything out. I figure everything out. How many times have you, I'm sure you guys have experienced it, the libertarian douchebags on Twitter who they read like a few Ayn Rand books, a Rothbard book, and a Hayek book, or maybe a Milton Friedman book too, but they don't like him because he's not pure enough, and they think they know everything about economics. Like, oh yeah, you don't know anything about economics. I mean, it's obviously a good thing to exploit near slave labor overseas and ship U.S. jobs out of the country. I don't know. Or not. Or not, or maybe it actually is a good thing to look out for your fellow countrymen and countrywomen, and countrymen and countrywomen, that sounds weird. And tariffs sometimes are a good thing. And yes, the idea of protectionism, the word protectionism has been maligned as some sort of dirty word, but it's the same as like welfare. Like, ooh, welfare, so evil. Is it really? Well, then why is it good in some circumstances? Would you look out for the welfare of your kids? Would you look out for the welfare of your parents? Would you want to protect your kids? Protect your parents? You say yes, right? So why is it such a fucking dirty and wrong thing to say, I kind of want to do that for my neighbor too. Let's protect. Let's look out for the welfare of everybody in the community. Is that a bad thing? It's not a bad thing. It's been maligned as a bad thing. But sometimes protectionism makes fucking sense. And tariffs make fucking sense. And keeping jobs in the U.S. and not doing these trade deals makes sense. Because at the end of the day, who really benefits? Who really benefits? Rand Paul's spinning it like, you're hurting the middle class if you don't ship, outsource all the jobs. No, who benefits? The corporations. They lower their costs and increase their profits. And that's just a savvy cover for what they're doing when people like Rand Paul go out there and say, no, it's good because the shirt costs $7. Yeah, forget the fact it's almost slave labor overseas for this and forget the fact we just lost a lot of good-paying U.S. jobs. It's $7. And then final point I'll make here is on the Buy American thing. Yeah, let's be clear. It's not like, oh, Trump is good on this and Rand Paul's bad on this. No, Trump's just a liar. Trump goes, at least Rand Paul is at least consistent. He says, hey, man, I don't like buy American, hire American. I don't think it's a good idea. I think free trade is better, and we should, hey, if the jobs go overseas, they go overseas. That's freedom, baby. What do you want me to say? They should have, the corporation should have the freedom to do that. At least he's consistent, and he's upfront about his position. Donald Trump says, oh, yeah, buy American, hire American, my only rules. Really? Then why do you have your products made in 12 different countries, you fucking liar? You scumbag? Who does that? Yeah, buy American. That's what I'm for. Hire American. Anyway, most of my products are made overseas. Isn't that great? What? you don't practice what you preach because you're a liar. And then also, just spare me the, oh, yeah, well, he might act like that personally, but policy-wise, he's good and he's on the buy American, hire American team. That's not true either. That's not true. He could have signed an executive order on day one that buy American, hire American actually means buy American, hire American. Like all the products that the federal government has to buy, you can only buy American. That's a rule that used to be in place, and they got rid of it. It wasn't Trump who got rid of it. Previous administrations got rid of it. I'm not sure if it was under Reagan or H.W. Bush or W. Bush or Clinton or Obama. I don't know who got rid of it originally. But it became, oh, no, buy American means you can buy American or any of our allies, and we still consider it buying American. But that's not buy American. So what do you mean? If you buy it from China, if you buy it from Israel, if you buy it from the U.K., that's not fucking American. What are you talking about? He could have said on day one, I'm signing an executive order that buy American means buy fucking American. But he didn't do it. You know what else he didn't do? Really get rid of TPP. Because he said, oh, yes, I'm going to axe this. But then what happened? In his renegotiation of NAFTA that's going on right now, they're taking a bunch of provisions from TPP and flipping them right in. So Trump is just a liar on trade. He tells you one thing, he does the opposite. He stabs you in the back. At least Rand Paul is upfront about how loathsome his ideology is. Okay. All right, let's do one more, and then we will take a break. In Israel and Palestine, there's been a very wild and scary few days recently. I want to go ahead and break down the whole story for you. This is from Vice News. Tensions over Jerusalem's holiest site exploded into violence Friday, leaving at least 5 people dead and another in critical condition, stirring fear that greater violence could soon spread throughout the country. Protests were marred early Friday when an Israeli settler killed an 18-year-old Palestinian demonstrating in the Ras al-Amud neighborhood in East Jerusalem. In separate incidents later on, Israeli police killed 2 Palestinian protesters who were on the streets during clashes with Israeli forces. According to Palestinian health officials, and 2 Israeli settlers living in a West Bank settlement were killed in a stabbing attack, while the 3rd remains in critical condition. Friday's outbreak in violence followed a series of tit-for-tat actions by Israelis and Palestinians centering on the Al-Aqsa Mosque, known to Jews as the Temple Mount. Israel brought escalations to a boil by closing the mosque for Friday prayers last week and installing metal detectors. That decision came after 3 Palestinian militants, whom Israeli police spokesman Mickey Rosenfeld identified as terrorists, attacked a group of Israeli police officers guarding the mosque complex, killing 2 officers. All 3 attackers were killed in the shooting. A growing right-wing movement to allow open Jewish prayer at the site, which is currently barred by Israeli law, and ultimately build a Jewish temple there, has stirred worry among Palestinians who view the Al-Aqsa Mosque as a symbol of their national aspirations for a state and capital in East Jerusalem. Combined with Palestinian concern over changes to religious arrangements at the mosque complex, the introduction of the metal detectors has led to mass protests across the occupied Palestinian territories. In Jerusalem, Palestinians responded to the Israeli security moves with a boycott. The Waqf, the Jordanian Islamic authorities that manage the holy site, called on worshippers to reject Israel's measures by holding mass prayers on the streets of Jerusalem's old city. But many of the mass prayers quickly turned into nightly clashes with Israeli police. Palestinian authorities and protesters have remained steadfast throughout the week, calling for mass prayer and protests on Friday, the Islamic holy day. Thousands of Palestinians poured into Jerusalem's old city to participate, and Israeli security forces fired tear gas and rubber bullets injuring at least 450 Palestinians, according to the Palestinian Red Crescent. The protests have since spread from Jerusalem to other cities in the Palestinian West Bank, and the Palestinian militant group Hamas warned that Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem are red lines. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has held firm, vowing that the metal detectors would remain, despite Israeli Army officials' request that he remove them to avoid greater unrest. Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, meanwhile, announced that he will cut off all contacts with Israel over the metal detector dispute. So, here we go again. Now, usually when there's tensions like this that start in Jerusalem, it spreads over and then it leads to more violence. And then at some point, we're led to, just like what happened in 2014, a horrendous situation where the Israeli military basically did a slaughter fest in Gaza. And they killed 500 Palestinian children, over 2,000 people overall. I think over 80% of them were civilians, according to either Amnesty International or the United Nations. So these things rarely have a good ending. And I've seen some really stomach-churning video over this as well. It was circulating around social media. For example, there was one Muslim man who decided, I'm going to do my prayers here, here being like outside of the mosque and on the road where there was like protesting going on. So he begins his prayers, and an Israeli officer runs up and kicks the guy. Just assaults him while he's doing his prayers. And unfortunately, stuff like this is all too common, man. This is all too common. You see people who are under permanent occupation subject to more and more of a crackdown, more and more rules. Now there's metal detectors at what's viewed as one of their holiest sites. But that's another huge issue with what's going on here is the uber religiosity involved on both sides of that equation. So you really do have people fighting over this piece of land that they both view as incredibly holy sites. That's a recipe for a disaster. Because there are a lot of really true believers there on both sides who think, no, like we need to fulfill our prophecies and have this be our site, whether it's the mosque or whether it's the Temple Mount. And that's going to lead to problems. If the same goddamn strip of land, you both say, that no, that's ours 100%, and God wants it to be ours. Oof. I mean, therein lies the heart of the problem with fundamentalist religion, is these inexorable claims that are just not true on either side. It's not true that the land is holy. It's just land. But that's one of the big portions of this, is these giant religious tensions. But then the other portion of it is, as we talk about all the time on this show, there's a permanent occupation going on, and the world just kind of sits by idly. I mean, at the UN, most countries have come to the proper conclusion, which is, hey, look, man, Israel, you got to stop it. And we got to come to the table and do a reasonable deal where you're giving Palestinians statehood, you're giving them independence, you're giving them their freedom, and you're ending the occupation. I mean, the occupation has been going on since 1967, you know? And what we have is the Palestinians, because they recognize their situation is getting more and more dire, and they're losing more and more land, and the Israelis are building more and more settlements. They've been willing recently to just, okay, here, we'll give you this much more. We'll give you that much more. I mean, how many times have we discussed the deal that Jordan proposed on behalf of the Palestinians at the UN? Of course, Palestinians can't do it because they're not recognized by the UN. But Jordan proposed a deal. Hey, let's do the 1967 borders. Let's do the 1967 borders. Let's split up Jerusalem. Equal statehood for both. You know, as I've discussed, sometimes good walls make for good neighbors, and the religious differences among the ethnic differences between the Palestinians and the Israelis are so deep that I wouldn't have a problem with a giant wall there, that as long as the land distribution is fair. But this has basically been proposed by the Palestinians, and even Hamas agrees to the 1967 borders, and it goes, oh, we are rejecting this out of hand. Fuck you mean you're rejecting it out of hand? No, they must come and negotiate directly with us. So they negotiate directly with them, and Israel goes, we don't agree to any of the things you want. Then they go to the UN, and they go, how dare you go to the UN? You have to negotiate face-to-face with us. But they did, and you said no to everything. Then they go to the UN, and you go, how dare you go to the UN? Then there are people who are desperate and react with violence. You go, oh, my God, they're reacting with violence. How dare they? What do you want them to do? Then the last effort of people to free Palestine is what? Boycotts, divestments, and sanctions, BDS. And they go, ha, how dare you? What an anti-Semitic movement. Anti-Semitic movement. You say, hey, the only way you can resist is nonviolent, peaceful protest movement. Well, what the fuck do you think BDS is? That's exactly what it is. Hey, if you don't give us, you know, a state and we don't get a reasonable deal here, we're going to do boycotts, divestments, and sanctions. So they're saying we're going to hurt you economically if you're not more reasonable. And they go, how dare you? That's anti-Semitic. So what's your stance? Their position is really just sit back and take it. Just sit back and take it, and every time we build a new settlement, we take more land, we come up with more draconian rules to further show to you that you're under occupation, more checkpoints, metal detectors, not letting you go into your own mosque at the what you view as one of the holiest sites in Islam. They, slapping them in the face, and then when there's a reaction, they go, oh, I can't believe that you reacted. It's just so stupid. So, look, we got to – I mean, bottom line is, man, Israel needs to be forced to the table, and they need to be told, look, it's this or you're going to lose a lot. So it's a two-state deal on the 1967 borders or you lose a lot. So the U.S. should stop giving you billions and billions of dollars and stop giving you so many weapons. So that's what the U.S. should do. They should threaten all that stuff. We'll just stop all the aid that you get immediately if you don't do a deal. That should happen. The international community should rally around BDS. And that's the only way to really get it done. Hey, it worked for apartheid South Africa. And what we have in Israel is an apartheid-like situation. I mean, that's what it is. Permanent occupation, permanent oppression, and then now you have tensions boiling over as a result of what's happening there. And then also, as I told you, you had an Israeli settler kill an 18-year-old Palestinian demonstrating in the Rosk al-Amud neighborhood in East Jerusalem. And then as a response, you've had tit-for-tat as a response to that. So senseless violence done by the settlers and then responded by senseless violence against civilians done on the Palestinian side. So we got to stop. We need to stop the cycle of violence, and we need to come to a reasonable conclusion here and a reasonable deal here, because we've been dancing around the issue for years and years and years, and the U.S.'s position is clear. We're going to pay lip service to the idea of peace, but then in our actions we're going to say we're fine with permanent occupation. It's time to stop that, because we're sitting by as people's lives are being destroyed, their land is being taken, and they live under a grotesque occupation where they're subject to second-class citizenship and military checkpoints and a kind of life that you wouldn't wish on anybody, because they're certainly not free, they're certainly not independent, and the entire time that all that's going on, they're also accused of being barbaric savages who wouldn't be able to handle freedom, and they just need these benevolent occupiers to be there. Okay. Let's take our final break. When we come back, I got some Trump stuff, and then I got the issues that matter most to the American people, a poll on that, and Glenn Beck. So stay right there, guys. We'll be right back with all that and much more. I'm not sure how you scared, you had your kindness, so you buy me.
with the left, the left. You will think so, won't bone drop you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left.
All right, everybody.
With the left, the left. You will think so, won't bone drop.
Let's go with the stuff that gets no coverage, but it should get a lot of coverage. What Trump is doing behind the scenes. Trump is continuing his war on environmental and safety regulations. Look at this from The Hill. President Trump is expected to nominate a coal lobbyist and an energy industry attorney for a pair of key posts at the Environmental Protection Agency. Sources close to the administration said Andrew Wheeler, I don't know what that word is, a consulting lobbyist whose clients include coal mining company Murray Energy Corp, is in line for deputy administrator. Bill Wareham, a Hunton and Williams attorney, is likely the nominee for assistant administrator for air and radiation, a position whose jurisdiction includes climate change programs. Climate Wire first reported the expected nominations earlier Friday. Wheeler, who was once an aide to Senator Jim Inhofe, was mentioned as the top contender for deputy administrator in March. So Jim Inhofe is the number one climate science denier in the Senate. That's the guy who brought the snowball into the Senate and said, oh, here's how we know climate change isn't real. Got a snowball here. Okay. And he threw it on the ground. He wrote a whole book. Senator Jim Inhofe wrote a book about how climate change is a hoax. And one of his aides is now going to get a key position at the EPA where he's in charge of climate change programs. And a coal lobbyist. See, this is a classic example of the fox guarding the hen house. This is the number one Republican trick. See, when they campaign, a lot of Republicans, what they do is they say, you know, what we got to do is we got to get rid of the EPA. That's what we got to do. We got to eliminate it. That's what we got to do. Yeah, we're going to do that. We're going to get rid of it. Then when they get in there, they realize, okay, well, we can't get rid of it. Let's get serious here. That's not going to happen. So what's the second best thing to getting rid of it? You appoint people to be in leadership positions at the EPA who make it their mission to handcuff the EPA. You put people to lead the EPA who are representatives of the industries that the EPA is supposed to be regulating. So you're basically paying them and appointing them to not do their job, to do the opposite of their job. And therefore, you are effectively eliminating the EPA. You are, in practice, eliminating the EPA, even though on paper, they're still there. So, and this is something we've seen all the different regulatory agencies. And unfortunately, far too often when it comes to regulating Wall Street, this happens not just with the Republicans, but also with the Democrats. So you pick people to regulate Wall Street who don't believe in regulating Wall Street, who let Wall Street do whatever they want because they believe in the philosophy of deregulation. They believe that the bankers are the smartest guys in the room and they should be left on their own to make their own decisions and then everything will work out just fine. Except it doesn't work out fine. As we've seen from history, we know as a matter of fact that when you deregulate and let them do whatever they want, they're going to make decisions that profit them and their companies in the short run at the expense of the long-term viability of the economy. So it'll happen again. There's no question about it. I mean, you don't think we're in a bubble right now? Guaranteed we're in a bubble. I mean, look at where we bottomed out, 2008, 2009, 2010, still doing pretty shitty. Then the stock market starts bouncing back, doubles from what it was. You know, we're right back to square one with a reinflated bubble. And it's all going to come crashing down because when you deregulate and cut taxes for the rich, which is exactly what Trump is doing, that'll just make it happen even faster. That'll pop that bubble even faster. So I would short the U.S. economy. You know, I'm not really an investor or anything, but if you want to make money, you short the U.S. economy. You short the stock market. You bet on a giant downturn to come at some point because it's going to come. And, you know, this is just another key piece of evidence here that it shows you their entire regulatory mindset. Hey, a coal lobbyist and a huge climate science denier at the EPA to run things that are key in fighting climate change and regulating the energy industry. They're there to do the exact opposite. Okay. So recently we shared how the company Carrier is laying people off even after Trump did his big photo op where he said, oh, look, I'm saving jobs. Isn't this great? And the New Yorker spoke to one laid off worker, and she did not hold back about what she thought about President Trump. So look at this. A woman who worked at the Carrier Corporation for the past 25 years unloaded on President Donald Trump in an interview with the New Yorker just days after she agreed to take a buyout from the company. Even though Trump pledged to save jobs at the Carrier plant late last year, the company this week laid off 300 employees in what is expected to be just the first round of layoffs. Brenda Darlene Battle, a 55-year-old Indianapolis native, decided to accept a buyout from the company before the layoffs began. Newly unemployed, she opened up to the New Yorker about how terribly Carrier had treated its employees over the last several months. Quote, it used to be a fun place to work. I didn't mind going, she explained. Then they started making changes that only benefit them. Robots, cutting jobs. Just yesterday they were talking about cutting a three-man blower shelf crew. They deal with the forms that hold the blower on one side and the heating element on the other, down to two, but two people can't do that job. She then reflected about Trump's visit to Carrier last December and said she believed it was a setup to make Trump look good while still keeping in place plans for mass layoffs. Quote, I think the CEO of Carrier and Trump was in bed together the whole time, she said. That day Trump came to Carrier, those two were too chummy. The way they sniggled and giggled, that sneaky kind of shit-eating grin. As for what she'll do now, Battle says that she will spend some time with her 77-year-old father. He thinks Trump blew smoke up our asses, too, she said of her father. Damn. So, yeah, we now know that that was the case. I mean, at the time, I must say, I was fooled by the TPP move from Trump where he said, well, I signed an executive order, we're getting rid of TPP. I said, great, because that's exactly what we want as progressives, get rid of the TPP. Wonderful. One of the few good things Trump did. But then, as we learned recently, in his renegotiation of NAFTA, he's slipping in provisions that are from the TPP. So he was just lying to us. He was doing a roundabout trick. See, I thought what might happen is he gets rid of TPP and then later on he brings back a new trade deal and says, oh, no, this isn't TPP. This is the TTD, Trump trade deal. So, yeah, this isn't the same thing. And just keep the provisions mostly the same with a few tweaks here and there. No, it turns out what he did is, he said, oh, in my renegotiation of NAFTA, I'm going to slip in some TPP provisions. Well, now we know the whole thing. I mean, at the time, there were some little pieces of information that came out where we learned, oh, this is questionable with the Carrier deal. Because he said, oh, I'm saving whatever the number of jobs was. I don't remember now. But then the next day, articles would come out and say, actually, no, he's saving like half the number of jobs that he claims to be saving. And then like a month later, 2 months later, you started to see stories of like, actually, not even really doing that. What's happening is they're getting gigantic tax subsidies, Carrier is, to keep the jobs here, and they're only keeping the jobs here for a temporary amount of time, and then everything's going to go right back according to plan as they were planning all along, which is move towards automation, lay off people, pad the bottom line, the profit margin, and screw over the workers. So, oh, this was 100%. This was just a photo op to make him look good, to put on a big show about how, oh, here I am, I care about the American workers. Isn't this tremendous? I'm not like Crooked Hillary, who was in favor of NAFTA and outsourcing jobs. I'm not like her at all. Believe me. Let me just tell you. Except that is exactly what ended up happening. And it may even be more nefarious because you're just a better liar. Like, I don't doubt that, you know, Bill Clinton, Hillary, they're corrupt as fuck, but they may have actually been convinced by the propaganda where it's like, oh, no, this will be good for everybody with NAFTA because prices will fall so much. It'll help the American middle class or whatever. And so they really believed it. Oh, hey, yeah, maybe, I guess, here, I'll sign it. You got everybody telling you, oh, it'll be good, believe me. With Trump, he's just lying the whole time. He's just like, oh, yeah, no, I'm going to save the jobs. And don't worry, they're not going to be switched to robots. Fucking liar and a scumbag. And now the workers who are getting laid off, this one happened to take a buyout, but others just got laid off. They're like, whoa, we've been had. Okay. Let me jump ahead here to Glenn Beck because this is important. Well, it's more funny than important, but yeah, I want to play it for you. So here we go. Glenn Beck went on conservative host John Ziegler's podcast, and they spoke about the state of right-wing media. And, you know, Beck has recently been given a lot of credit for being anti-Trump, and he really tried to hammer that home in this conversation. And, in fact, he said this on the idea of rejecting Trump. Quote, if you understand I'm principle-driven, you'll be able to predict my every single move. If you think I'm driven by anything else, you're going to lose. While I dug up an old Secular Talk compilation here on Beck, and we'll try to see. He says he's principle-driven, so let's try to see exactly what those principles are.
Just give me an Electoral College number for Romney, you know, ballpark it.
You know, 270 to win, and I think it's easy over that. I think it could be 320, 330.
I agree. The president might go to prison for this one.
This one document would take down pretty much the whole power structure. Pretty much everything. I will just tell you, it will take down the GOP. It will take down the Democrats. It will take down many members of Congress. It will take all of them down. And outside of Congress, it will take them down.
We have a government that has built a cage. We have Marxist after Marxist after Marxist after Marxist, anti-capitalist everywhere. Global redistribution, not from the wealthy to the poor in America, but from the wealthy America to the poorest nations, and a global governance structure. They can grab companies. They think that it is a danger to the nation. They can just grab it and shut you down. That's a little frightening with that power.
And that's not companies who've taken stimulus. That's any company.
Any
they
company.
Deem big enough to harm the economy,
any
they can
company.
Take control of it.
Now, let me ask you this. Could you say that Fox News?
Yes.
You darn right you could.
Yes.
Could you say that talk radio is?
You bet.
Of course you can.
You could take control of Clear Channel.
Look, how do we know Bin Laden's dead?
You don't. There's another network who did a big, long dissertation last night based on me saying that I'm a madman. Because no intelligent person believes the book of Revelation is true. Well, I'm intelligent. I may not be the smartest guy, but I'm intelligent, and I believe it to be true. Agenda 21. They refer to it as sustainable development. Well, that sounds good. Gee, Wally, that sure sounds great to me. I mean, who's against development, especially the sustainable kind? Yeah, you might change your mind when you hear a little bit of the background of sustainable development. You are for a time period going to have Nazi influence appear and maybe a Nazi state come around. I think you might even have some Nazi influence in the United States, unfortunately, because we've had it before, and it will happen there and there, I think. And I can't decide yet who gets the United Kingdom.
Damn. So he says he's principle-driven. I guess the principle he's talking about is being a lunatic. Because he's stuck to that principle pretty well. I just want to plead with the media. Don't do it. Don't rehabilitate him simply because he's anti-Trump, and so you're going to remake him, and oh, look, now he's so reasonable because he doesn't like Trump. That's the lowest bar in human history. Oh, you don't like Trump. I guess you must be a good person. Bill Kristol doesn't like Trump. David Frum doesn't like Trump. Evan McMuffin doesn't like Trump. I mean, these are guys who are deep right wingers. They were for the invasion of Iraq and Guantanamo Bay and war crimes, and they're wrong about everything. And so that's not enough. That's not enough. This guy is a loathsome moron, and he's a lunatic. And just because he doesn't like Trump doesn't mean like, oh, yay, let's revive him. No, don't. Don't. Let him stay on a shitty network that has negative 8 viewers and is about to go under. Let him stay over there and do his thing and every now and then do a podcast that nobody listens to talk about how he's so principle-driven. Principles like be afraid of Agenda 21 and Revelations is true and let me make shit up about Nazi invasions. He's just so nuts. Okay. Now, I don't have much time left, but I'll try to squeeze in two more here. The resistance is continuing to resist in the dumbest way possible. This is from Raw Story. The White House said on Sunday it was open to legislation toughening sanctions on Russia as momentum increased in the U.S. Congress for tougher action against Moscow. Two U.S. senators said they believe that the legislation that allows for new sanctions against Russia would pass with enough votes to override a veto should U.S. President Donald Trump decide not to sign the bill. Republicans and Democrats reached agreement on legislation that allows new sanctions on Russia, Iran, and North Korea in a bill that would limit any potential effort by Trump to lift the sanctions against Moscow, We support where the legislation is now and will continue working with the House and the Senate to put those tough sanctions in place on Russia until the situation in Ukraine is fully resolved, and it certainly isn't right now, White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders told ABC this week with George Stephanopoulos' program. Many lawmakers hope the bill will send a message to Trump to keep a strong line against Russia. Quote, I think it will pass probably overwhelmingly again in the Senate and with a veto-proof majority, Senator John Thune, a member of Republican leadership, said on Fox News Sunday. Senator Ben Cardin, the top Democrat on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, said the bill has broad support in the Senate and in the House. If Trump vetoes the bill, we will override the veto, Cardin said. So, okay, everybody talks about bipartisanship, and now they love to say, oh, bipartisanship. Isn't that so great? Isn't it inherently good? Your answer is, hell no, it's not. Because usually when you have bipartisanship, it's Democrats and Republicans agreeing to screw you. Or it's Democrats and Republicans agreeing to make a bad decision. And here we have one right here. They say, now the Democrats, they're just hawks now. And they agree with the neocons. That's what you have. You have a neocon corporate Democrat alliance. Where they say, oh, yes, the Russian election meddling. What we need to do is we need to punish Russia for their election meddling. So we're going to do new sanctions on that and over Crimea. By the way, you already did a tremendous amount of sanctions over Crimea. By the way, I support many of the sanctions for Crimea. So I'm not saying you get rid of those sanctions. I wouldn't get rid of those sanctions. But you don't add new ones. What? So they want to do new sanctions, and then so the Democrats get baited in with that, and then the Republicans are like, oh, hey, while we're at it, let's do new sanctions against North Korea and new sanctions against Iran. So in other words, the Democrats are now in favor of blowing up one of Obama's signature accomplishments, the Iran deal. Because you do know that under the Iran deal, there's not much the U.S. has to do. There's not much. But among the things that the U.S. has to do is get rid of the sanctions that were there, give Iran back their own money, which we had taken. We kidnapped their money, and then now we give it back because they're complying with the Iran deal. And don't add new sanctions. That was one of, like, three things that the U.S. had to do. And now they're saying, no, let's add new sanctions. And the Democrats are in favor of it. And they might have enough to override a veto if Trump were to veto it. And by the way, the White House says, no, totally, we'll do more sanctions. We don't care. Yeah, they don't care. You want to know why, guys? Because that's a right-wing fucking bill. You want to do more sanctions on Russia when they're sanctioned out the wazoo already. You want to do more on North Korea when they're sanctioned out the wazoo already. And gratuitously, you say, yeah, let's blow up the Iran deal. And then when Iran retaliates, you're going to go, how dare you violate the deal? But you just violated the deal. You just did it. What do you think? We're like, yeah, we don't have to hold up our end of it, but they have to hold up their end of it. The fuck kind of shit is that? So the Democrats are just now right wing. They're just right-wing on many issues now because the Russia hysteria has gotten them to that point. Yeah, sanctions. Hey, you guys mind if we slip in sanctions also on North Korea and Iran? Yeah, as long as you're doing it on Russia, totally. We're Democrats. We're so progressive and liberal, aren't we? Yeah, blowing up Obama, one of his signature accomplishments, the Iran deal. Destabilizing the Middle East even further. Destabilizing the situation with Russia even further. Escalating with them. They don't understand the consequences of their actions. You want to escalate with another nuclear armed power? You think that's something that people in middle America, like, yeah, I can't wait to fucking go to the brink of war with Russia. Or I can't wait to, you know, push Iran further in a corner, blow up the nuclear deal, lead to escalation, maybe another war with them where we go in there. The U.S. looks for regime change in there. More death, more destruction, more money wasted. You think people in middle America, you think grassroots Republicans or Democrats are like, yeah, do that. Real people have real problems, and your dumbasses are sanctioning people. Real people worry about the cost of health care. They worry about their jobs. They worry about, you know, medical bankruptcies is a huge issue. The cost of college, unaffordable. Our infrastructure is falling apart at the seams, and these dumbasses are agreeing, bipartisan, you know, they're agreeing, hey, let's just sanction more people and escalate further with everybody and blow up the Iran deal in the process. You're all pathetic idiots and losers. God damn it. I'm out of time. 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, I'm out of time, guys. That's a damn shame. Okay. I guess we're going to have to cut it off there. That sucks because I had another important story I had to get to, but I'll do it tomorrow. No big deal. All right, everybody, I love you, and we will be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Everybody, enjoy the rest of your day. Have a good one. Peace. Mwah. Big kisses.